Good evening, everyone. It's Thursday, April 20th, and we are pleased to welcome you to The Real Talks, where we don't only spill tea, but we sip it. I'm here with my girls Emily Chavez and Elizabeth Aloidi. We'll be giving you the lowdown on all the buzz in the world of entertainment. It's a chilly 8 degrees and raining outside our East York studios as fall weather makes a brief return in the 6. We will head into our newsroom after a quick message from our sponsors.
So baby, pull me closer in the backseat of your...
Dude, what are you doing?
Oh, my 30-day free trial on Spotify just ended.
Ooh, you should get Apple Music. It's a 3-month free trial.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, and you get free access to all iTunes library.
Sick, let me sign up right now.
And now, sit back, relax, and enjoy the 3:30 gossip. Fox News drops host Bill O'Reilly after harassment allegations. Fox News has conducted a thorough review of the claims, and both the company and O'Reilly have agreed that it's best if the host leaves. This is the second time in the last year that Fox is in the headlines with harassment claims. Last July, the chairman of Fox, Roger Ailes, was forced to resign after sexual harassment claims emerged. Right before the allegations, O'Reilly signed a contract for $25 billion per year for the next 4 years. The host will not receive the full amount. However, an undisclosed source close to O'Reilly says Fox News will be paying him tens of millions of dollars. In other news, People magazine names Julia Roberts World's Most Beautiful Woman for the fifth time. This is a new record for the magazine and Roberts, putting her in front of George Clooney, who has been named Sexiest Man Alive twice. However, this has many people upset, as once again the media has named a white woman the most beautiful. The Toronto Star claims crowning Julia Roberts again is not a good look for People. That's it for my segment. Next up is Liz with the pregnancy announcement.
Hi guys, it's Liz here. Tennis queen Serena Williams is pregnant. Yeah, I know. She announced her pregnancy with a now-deleted Snapchat post of her in a yellow bathing suit showing off her toned figure and slight baby bump with a caption reading 20 weeks. According to our calculations, that means she was pregnant when she got her 23rd Grand Slam win at the Australian Open in January. Though she soon deleted her snap, Williams reps confirmed her pregnancy, and Williams got engaged to Reddit co-founder Alex Ohanian in December, and this is the first child for the couple. Now let's throw it back for a second. Tyra Banks just announced the sequel to her 2000 flick, Life Size, where she plays the life-size doll, Eve, who magically comes to life after young Lindsay Lohan's character tries to resurrect her mother, but awakens Eve, the life-size doll, instead. Banks will be playing Eve in the sequel, which follows a grown-up Eve helping a young woman find love and live life. The movie is set to air in December 2018. And now let's send it to Kristen for some more buzz.
Thanks, Liz, and hi, everyone. In sports news, rising NFL star Aaron Hernandez has passed away. Reports claim that the controversial star committed suicide in his jail cell earlier this morning after facing a life sentence. Hernandez was under fire after being convicted of a friend's murder. He was also previously acquitted for 2 charges. The New England Patriots coach called the entire situation a complete tragedy. The Hernandez family has asked to not be harassed by media during this time. In movie news, Fresh Prince star Will Smith is in talks to play the genie in Disney's live-action adaptation of Aladdin. The role was previously voiced by Robin Williams. No word yet on if there are any other casting decisions being considered for the film. Disney announced that they will be releasing live-action versions of Disney classics for the next few years. And that's it for me. Stay with us now, because coming up, we will be talking about a hot-button issue sweeping the world of Hollywood films, whitewashing. We will dig deeper into the issue, hear about the representation of race in media, and hate crimes against minorities. Stay tuned. Next person in line, please.
Still serving breakfast?
Miss, we have breakfast all day at McDonald's.
What?
Girl, yes. We can hook you up with hot cakes, egg McMuffins, hash browns.
Awesome, but when did this start?
Just this year. More than 1,000 locations now serving all day breakfast, so you don't have to rush. Hi again, I'm Kristen Dupin with Emily Chavez and Elizabeth Elodi, and you're listening to The Real Talks, live from the East York campus of Centennial College. In this segment, The Real Talks will be getting very real as we discuss Hollywood's obsession with only casting white actors instead of people of color. As whitewashing is becoming the new norm in Hollywood, many are beginning to question directors and casting directors on the way in which they approach a film about people of color. From Ghost in a Shell to Death Note, whitewashing is something that is simply not going away, despite society's rage against it. I sat down with Brandon Suknanan, co-founder of the website Geeks of Color, that champions the notion of diversity in Hollywood casting. I asked him what his website was doing to add to the conversation of whitewashing.
Before I get into that, I should kind of explain what whitewashing is. Mm-hmm. So, like, pretty much whitewashing is, like, it's just hiring a white actor or actress to play a role that should have gone to a person of color. And, like, we've seen this in, like, recent movies like Ghost in the Shell, where we have Scarlett Johansson playing the role of an Asian woman. And it's a story that's so ingrained in Japanese culture, but it's centering whiteness. And what that does is, like, it doesn't give, like, especially Asian women, the representation that they need. It kind of takes it away from them and centers it on whiteness. So kind of what we do is, for example, stuff like that is, like, we kind of uplift that, like, we uplift Asian American activists that, like, speak on this issue, and we have them write articles, we have them do, like blog posts and stuff to kind of just talk about this issue and kind of get to, kind of try and educate people on why this is wrong.
Mm-hmm. And going back to the movie that you mentioned, Ghost in a Shell, with Scarlett Johansson, so it received a lot of backlash. Did you watch it? Did you enjoy it? What were your thoughts on it?
I personally did not watch it. I didn't feel like my money should go towards something like that. I think I've had a lot of friends who have seen it. I've seen a lot of the reviews and stuff, and it obviously did not do well. It suffered from, like, bad acting, bad writing. I think a lot of this could have been remedied by just hiring an Asian actress, because when this whole controversy happened, like, people just didn't want to support the movie because they didn't see it as a faithful anime adaptation.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's okay to cast people of color as white characters?
It's definitely okay. Like, think about it this way. Let's step back for a second. So when you have a character that is, like, when you have a black character, a lot of times their story centers around their ethnicity. So we have Black Panther, who is an African king. And if we were to make that a white character, then it would obviously get in between the whole black, between the whole notion of, like, an African king. Or when we have Luke Cage, whose story centers around being a black man in New York, that story doesn't transfer well to a white character. But I think when you have the reverse, where it's a white character, it's kind of easier to translate that story into a person of color, because them being white isn't, like, a mainstay in their character. It isn't an important part. Mm-hmm. That, like, their story can be transferred to a person of color and still be relatively sane. So for me personally, I think the story of Peter Parker, who's Spider-Man, could be played by maybe an Indian or an East Asian actor, because I feel like the story of a young nerd living in Queens, going to high school, is a story that, like, is universal across, like, any ethnicity, and the experiences are kind of the same,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Right. So the movie The Fate of the Furious just came out like a few days ago, and a lot of people commend that whole franchise on being diverse and inclusive. Do you think diversity sells? Or especially with this movie that's come out, the franchise is highly successful. Do you think it sells? Or do you think it's more forced in the Hollywood world?
I think when you look at a franchise like Fast and the Furious, the Fast and the Furious has been diverse for like the last 20 years, I think. And a lot of people, I know for me personally, a lot of my friends and stuff, like, we love the Fast and Furious movies because we kind of see people that kind of look more like us in them. And we see them as these big action heroes. Like, we see The Rock, we see Vin Diesel, we see, like, Michelle Rodriguez. We see all these, like, people of color. And we see them doing huge stunts. And it kind of gives us the representation that we need. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the time, especially when we're going back to Ghost in the Shell, when they had chosen a white actress, they said the reason why was because they thought a white actress could sell. But then we see franchises like The Fast and the Furious, which has a fully diverse cast, and they're doing like millions of dollars in revenue. And we also see that in other properties now too, where like Power Rangers came out recently, and that had a full cast of diverse kids, and that movie really did well, got good feedback as well. So I think diversity is a selling factor because people want to see themselves represented.
Mm-hmm. That was Brandon Suknanan, co-founder of Geeks of Color, talking about whitewashing in Hollywood. He was speaking to me about the issue.
Thanks, Kristen. In recent news, Toronto Police reports that the number of hate crime reported have increased by 8% in the last year. Many people correlate this increase to the 2016 U.S. presidential election. I, Emily Chavez, spoke with Provincial Offense Officer Z. Ali, who shares this view.
Has a little bit of authority. So have you seen any change in people's behavior at all in your workplace?
Not really. I work in a pretty diverse and professional environment. Anything that's ever like brought up gets reported immediately. Like, there's a zero tolerance policy for like harassment and like discrimination, especially like with the people I work with. Yeah, it's absolutely like everything's always recorded and you're always being watched. So
And have you witnessed any hate crime being in your job right now?
Hate crimes like with the people I interact with?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, all the time, especially, like, when you deal with certain kinds of people and, you know, they have to resort to using racial slurs and different kinds of things to say to you to try to get you, you know, upset and get a rise out of you, because that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to provoke you so that they can, you know, get you to do something out of character and, you know, like, get physical, which, you know, in the end, you yourself can end up being charged. So it's not something that's different. It's just a tactic that they use.
Well,
it doesn't matter. Yeah.
The Toronto Police, they released a statement saying that the hate crime in Toronto overall has increased by 8% just in 1 year. Why do you think there's a sudden increase in crime?
I think it's a lot has to do with media, because Donald Trump won the election and he stands for certain kinds of things. And there's a lot of people that believe in those kinds of things, but they are too afraid to speak up because obviously there's such a strong opinion against it, and they don't want to be considered racist and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So now that he's won, and all that stuff is trickling down to us, and, you know, he doesn't like a specific kind of, you know, religion to enter the country and this and that, those people are the ones that, you know, like his supporters are the ones acting out kind of thing. I think that's why it's increased, because of that situation, to be honest with you. Because it's like a lot of, like, they just target, like, one religion, right? All the Muslim people, they think they're all, like, terrorists and whatever, so there's bound to happen if media is influencing them.
Yeah. Well, that actually leads into my next question. It was actually pretty much answer my next question. I was going to say some people blame the increase of hate crimes on Trump and how it's transcended into Canada. And I was going to ask you what you think about
it. I don't blame it. I know it. What's changed? What's changed in the last year?
Just it went from 135 reports to 145 reports, so like 10 extra reports. But which is the most? Judaism is the most, religion that's been targeted.
Okay.
And then after that is, LGBTQ groups, and then black people.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But I'm not on the list.
No. Well, Muslim comes fourth, I think.
Oh, we made it on the top.
Yeah, Muslim comes fourth, unfortunately.
That was Zia Lee, a provincial offense officer who has seen hate crimes in his workplace and the correlation with the 2016 U.S. presidential election. He was speaking to me, Emily Chavez.
Hi, everyone. It's Elizabeth. And on Real Talks, we think it's important to speak about issues that pertain to a large percentage of the population. And President Trump has been a discussion topic for quite some time now. And so I spoke with Gabriel Eppard, an American-Canadian who was actually present for the election. And here are his views on the new American president.
I've been here for like the last 6 years. Most of my family's in Detroit, though.
Right.
And I lived there for about like a little less than half my life. Probably, and like kind of like I didn't mind at all because like I've always been pretty involved in like politics,
yeah,
like, at least interested by, not involved, but like,
yeah,
I like to sit back and watch, and like it's been an interest of mine too, so I figured I'll try and help you.
Thank you.
From any perspective.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
So when what did you think when you found out that Trump was running for president?
Like I think it was the same feeling that a lot of people have. Like it was just no one took it serious.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, it honestly, until like I was actually in the States. I went for the election night.
Yeah.
I went down to Portland.
What was that like?
And it was incredible, actually. Like, it was surreal. It was I went to Portland, which is a very liberal city.
Yeah.
And, which is interesting because I don't know if you know about the dynamic, but Portland's a very liberal city, mm-hmm. but outside, Oregon is very conservative, so it's an interesting dynamic, and we were in Portland, and literally, like, when it happened, I remember sitting at the bar, and kind of looking around, and, like, people's heads were in their hands,
yeah.
like, crying, and, like, there was,
I
like,
cried.
yeah, there was almost, like, fisticuffs about yeah. a couple people, and, but then when we drove out of town, mm-hmm. there'd be, like, Trump posters everywhere and stuff, and, like, by that time, I'd been following enough, I was like, this is the real deal, like, mm-hmm. this is a very big possibility, and I think, like, it was strange how people took so long to be like, this is, he made it past the primary, like, you know what I mean, and then people were like, no, it won't happen yet and stuff, too, and it was just, like, it was really incredible, actually. So it was weird to watch, but it was also like it wasn't surprising because like, something I noticed before the election, like that night, we went to a basketball game, and just kind of hang out with that crowd, and no one seemed to, like, the people checking their phones and like trying to see what was going on was like the group of Canadians I was with.
Really?
Like, so there's so many. Yeah, there was a lot of people that were like disengaged as well, you know. So which made it really. Kind of like you, like, aha, I kind of see it. Like, they just, lots of people just seemed like they didn't care. Like, they were so uninvolved compared to, I was also there for the election when Obama had it too, as well.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like people, like, he just kind of slipped through the cracks almost, you know? So, like, it was a weird contrast for sure.
So, like, you mentioned being there for Obama's election night, is it? What contrast did you see with Trump, like, specifically?
Like, it, honestly, the way to describe it kind of just was, like, it almost, like, Trump was, like, an accident. Like, you know, everyone's like, oops, kind of at the end, you know, like, where, like, with the, like, I was in Seattle when Obama got elected, mm-hmm. and it was like, we did this, like, we went for it, like, this was a group effort and stuff, and it was like, you know, someone claiming what they did, and the other thing was, like, spilt milk, like, I don't know, and stuff, so that, like, that's, like, I don't know, like, that's how I would probably, like, put it.
Right.
Like, people are just kind of, no one wanted to take responsibility. And, but then there's, like, I think there was a lot, like, what I also noticed, like, people didn't realize that so many people were voting for him because, like, it was, like, it's hard to explain. Like, they knew, they just mm-hmm. couldn't tell, like, people were so isolated from each other, like, Trump supporter,
right.
Hillary supporter. So no one was like, oh, everyone I know is not going to, and the people who did support Trump didn't say it, right? So people didn't have a real idea, I think, and, like, and yeah, it was just, people took it for granted, I think, and it was just a pretty interesting, it was definitely, like, it was one of those moments I'll always, like, remember. Like, you know, it's kind of like the 9/11. Like, yeah. Not to put it like that, like, yeah. It's bad. But, like, I remember where I was in 9/11. Then that was, like, I'll always remember the exact, like, people's faces, the exact reaction yeah. and stuff. Like, I wasn't so surprised by that time. But it was super, super, like, surreal and just, yeah. like, crazy.
And that was Gabriel Eppert on the American election. And we'd like to say a big thanks to our listeners for tuning in to Real Talks. On behalf of us here at Real Talks, I'm Elizabeth Lloydie, and have a great evening.